The Attack Zone, Episode 5, Resource Management and Disruption. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Attack Zone. This is episode 5. Every 2 weeks, we bring you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. But I say we, I'm not speaking in the royal we. That's because with me on the line is my good friend and fellow TRPer, our managing editor, Randy. How are things going, Randy?
Things are going well. How are you?
I can't complain. I'm so glad that... I'm so glad today was Friday as we record this. My goodness, what a week. Ugh.
I hear you. I know I went into work for just a half day today, and it was one of those, well, we need to work a little later and try to get this done. But yes, indeed it is Friday, and the work week is complete.
People kept saying to me today, hey, how you doing? I'm like, well, I think I'll make it. The reason I'll make it is because it's Friday. If it were Monday, I would not make it. Not even a little bit. But why dwell on that? I'm ready for some fun this weekend. We have a big event we're heading down to in Morgantown, West Virginia. And that should be a lot of fun. Get to see Dane and some of his crew down there. I know Truby and Melissa will be there, who, of course, did quite well at Worlds. And so it should be a nice little afternoon of Dice Masters competition down at Four Horsemen Comics and Games in Morgantown. And, you know, maybe Future Dave will remember to cut in here and talk about how it went briefly.
Future Dave here. In short, it was a lot of fun. And you can read an article all about it on thereservepool.com. It's there. All right. Let's go back to the past.
Yeah, have fun with that, man. I'm still on a little bit of travel lockdown with the new baby and all. I'm hoping by the time Gen Con rolls around, I can get a few days leave and head out for that. But for right now, I'm definitely stuck here taking care of kids. And not that that's bad, but yes, not going
I'm
anywhere.
I'm stuck being a wonderful father for my children and providing for my family. Ugh.
I know. It's so inconvenient.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, part of the gaming hobby has to be that there's a part of us that has just never ever grown up, and yet there are more and more real world important life things that just come on in, and you gotta give them the time that you deserve. But my goodness, do I relate to that "why I'll never be an adult" article from Hyperbole and a Half. And if you haven't seen that, that's where the, like, blank all the things meme comes from. Yeah, I relate. All right, well, we're not here to talk about all of life's tribulations. Actually, maybe we are. Next up, 30-year fixed mortgages. No, we are going to get into some Dice Masters conversation, and we're going to start with a six-pack. We're going to do a six-pack that we have not yet done. This is Avengers versus X-Men six-pack.
Wow.
Lauren and I had some pack prizes a little while ago, and while it's a draft of this is a little bit rare, they have happened, and I think it would be fun to look at this. We don't get to consider from this perspective very often, do we?
No. No, I'm excited for this one. Hopefully our six-pack gives us some good choices.
Let's find out. There was another pack that had some, I could tell you, this one pack had... like, formerly Weapon 10 and some other stuff in it that was like, whoa. Another one had Sarina. We're not going to go with those. We're going to go with something that maybe is a little bit tougher, but perhaps not. Perhaps not. Okay, first up, in common, we have Cyclops Slim. That's the one where he deals damage equal to his full attack to each character blocking him instead of splitting. We have Mr. Fantastic common. He gets +2/+2 while blocking. And he has the taunt global with the mask. We have War Machine, combat comrade. He gets +2/+2 if you have Iron Man in the field. And he has the global: when one of your shield characters damages your opponent in the attack step, pay a shield to gain one life. We have Phoenix, at common. She's engaged. She gets +2/+2. It's a lot of these engagement bonuses. My goodness. And she, of course, has the taunt global as well. We have the common Thing. where if your opponent has more fielded characters than you think can be blocked and takes no damage while blocking. And finally, we round it out with Professor X Principal. While he's active, your opponent cannot reroll dice. You have to pay 2 life to prevent that effect for this turn. So anything common stand out to you right now? What's your leader in the clubhouse, as JT might say?
You know, there's no character really with an ability or any stats that jump out at me, but I do like the taunt globals. And that's always, that's always useful.
And yeah, I have to agree with that. The fact that we have both of them here, like, gives me a little bit of pause, because that means you would have to pass one on to somebody too, if you decided to take that. Now that's just a common. We don't know yet what else is in the pack. Well, I do, but you don't.
Yeah, that's true.
I have to say, I wonder in limited if it's possible that Thing is viable. I mean, unblockable with more stuff than you. I mean, it's potentially, you know, at level 2 or level 3, 5 or 8 damage getting through unbuffed.
Yeah, and with some of the globals on the basic actions that we now would have to choose from, and that might not be, you know, out of reach as in the way it might have been back in the day when AVX first appeared.
Well, that's true. And if we want to talk about basic actions that we now have, what about Cyclops Slim, right? Give that Overcrush, and that could be a problem.
Yeah.
And we have cheaper Overcrush than you might think if you look at Horn of the Unicorn only costing 3 instead of Anger Issues 4.
True. And, I mean, in a few weeks, we'll have Hulk out, so.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited for that one.
Right now, I think I would have to stick with Mr. Fantastic or Phoenix, and it's a flip of the coin. With depending, you know, what's kind of in our second six pack.
Well, let's do it. Well, let's look at our uncommons.
Yeah,
because we still have like half a thing here to go. We have Spider-Man Wall Crawler. That is the infamous Spider Bomb. You may pay when he attacks, he's not blocked. You may pay double fist to change your opponent's life to 10. We have Doc Ock, fully armed. When blocked, he has Overcrush basically. Any damage Doc Ock deals in excess of your blocking character's total defense is dealt to your opponent. Captain American, Sentinel of Liberty, gives sidekicks +2 attack, and your opponent's sidekicks cost 1 extra energy to field. We have Human Torch, Johnny Storm. We know what he does. Deal when you field a character, deals 1 to your opponent and 1 to a target character. And that rounds it out for our uncommons. So what does that change for you?
Well, as you were reading those off, I'm like, oh, Spider-Man. Yeah, Spider-Man's leading the way. And then you read Doc Ock. Like, wow, nothing else in AVX is going to have Overcrush. If I take Doc Ock, I could take Focus Power, make sure I spin him up to, you know, his 8 attack power. Yeah, let's go Doc Ock. And then you said Johnny Storm. And I forgot all about Spidey and Doc Ock. Johnny Storm all the way with this one so far.
Yep. I have to agree. Well, let's see if we change anything. We have two, 3 more cards here. 2. Nightcrawler, Circus Freak. I imagine that's not going to change
anything,
right?
That doesn't do it for me.
No. After assigning blockers, knock out 1 character blocking Nightcrawler. Yeah, okay. Nova, the rare.
Hmm.
When he takes damage in an attack step, he deals 2 damage to your opponent.
Hmm.
Yeah. That is an intriguing one.
The reason it's intriguing is Nova brings you a good ability with good stats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the draft scenario, I mean, you don't know what you're going to be going up against. So having Nova, you know, on his level 3 with that beefy attack power, I mean, that could really win you the game. I just don't think I could pass Johnny Storm on to my opponent, though. I don't think I could. I think I'd still have to go with the Human Torch, Johnny Storm, uncommon.
Now realize, of course, then you are passing Nova onto your opponent.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
I mean, if we talk about looking for narrow combos, now Johnny Storm will work with anything, and he will get damage going,
mm-hmm.
but he's not necessarily like a win in and of himself, right? Because he'll ping things away, but he doesn't attack for a ton, and you're going to get stuff out there, but you know, you don't know what you're going to get in pack two, but you can pretty well assume that as you get things passed to you, you're going to have the better two cost options, the better three cost options, you know, going away. You're not going to see those. You're not going to see a Starina pass to you. You know, things like that. So what are you going to field that's going to help you win with a Johnny Storm? I'm just playing devil's advocate. Yeah. Obviously, I really like Johnny Storm.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, can we agree? We're between Johnny Storm and Nova here,
yes.
Right? Do we have consensus on that?
Okay, yes,
me too.
Absolutely. Trying to kind of think back to AVX here.
You know, there's a chance that you could get past, and this could maybe, I don't know if this would help either. You could maybe get a cheap character like, well, I dare I say Ghost Rider?
And Ghost Rider, I wouldn't, but the common Black Widow would be definitely one to jump at.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good one. I mean, I guess some of the three costs, like Gambit and whatnot.
Yeah, there's a three cost Hawkeye that would that would do the job as well. I mean, I know the Hawkeye would probably, I mean, that could potentially be someone's first pick, so you might not get that passed to you.
Hawkeye's some good removal. He sure is. Yeah. I guess I would look at this. I know that if I take Nova, I can just take like Magic Missile or something like that with that basic action. I can take that basic action when I'm putting my team together. And I know I have something with Nova and Magic Missile, and I can spend the rest of my draft trying to figure out a way to protect that. I don't need another card if I take Nova.
Yes. And while I agree with that, I would say you don't have Iceman in this draft to guarantee you get Bolts.
Fair point.
There are not as many churn or ramp options in AVX to make sure that you can get that five cost early. Johnny Storm, you can. He's four. You can buy him first turn. And then turn two, you could bring Resurrection, use the Resurrection Global, and it would refill your bag. You guarantee him for turn three. I really think that...
Well, let's say this the other side. Turn one, a three cost and Resurrection. Turn two, you're buying your Nova.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's still all five dice that you're using
there.
But
it's a way of making
come
sure
around.
You purchase him.
And really, it's more important that you get Nova in the field. You don't need to do... You do 2-3 damage to him at a time, you're getting 4-6 through to your opponent's face very easily.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm leaning Nova. It sounds like you're leaning Johnny
And you
Storm.
Know, if you did take Nova, people don't like that Ghost Rider because of his fielding
cost. Yeah.
And he's a 2-cost bolt. That could help you out with Nova. I'd take Johnny Storm, though. I would take Johnny Storm on this one. And
I think I would take Nova, and I would be looking for a later Ghost Rider or something like that.
Yeah.
I just think, again, it's the narrowest. I know that I can win with just Nova, and, you know, I might already be at a disadvantage, because what if there's a Sirena out there in the six-pack? What if there's a Gabi? That's going to make it a lot harder for me, right? The power level of that first set just has a lot of... It swings.
Mm-hmm.
But... I feel like Nova probably gives me a better chance than just the Johnny Storm. Johnny Storm is better when I have some of the things around him that I want. When I have, like, the... You know, we'll think back to, like, the older Control team. I need characters that are in the starter for that to work. I need those beasts, you know?
See, and I think the complete...
I need that Storm.
I think those same exact things about Nova. The things I need to make Nova good aren't in AVX. Nova is at
his
best.
But I just need basic actions to make Nova good. Give me Magic Missile, and I have it. He's not going to be amazing as we see him in Constructed without that Iceman, but nothing is as amazing in Constructed, in Draft or Sealed as it is in Constructed.
That's true.
Nothing is. So,
is this the first?
All right,
this the first one we actually disagree on?
I think so.
Wow.
Well, I mean, you know, we've done a lot of DC, and at this point, I think we have DC pretty well figured out as far as that set goes. I mean, We've both played a couple of events with just DC only. I had my recent OP event with the hybrid. We did before that. It was the other kind, the draft. We now, of course, we have full Constructed coming up in 2 weeks. So I'm really excited for that. I'm really excited to see how these players at my store react to the full constructed and what teams come to the fold. I got to say, just like between the first OP we did and the second one, I saw a huge upgrade in the level of play. You know, I played some people again that I had played the first time. I played some people who I hadn't played. I played some people who were brand new. And in general, it was much more of a challenge than it was in the first. I went 4-0 in Swiss, but it was much more of a challenge to do that. The games were a lot closer. I, of course, had one game where my Red Tornado, oh my gosh, I was cursing my Red Tornado. I might be able to be heard on the video at one point going, "Red Tornado, what are you doing to me?" He would not roll. Turn after turn after turn. So I bought another Red Tornado. Turn after turn after turn. Energy, energy, energy. What are you doing to me, buddy? Yeah.
Well,
I'm not bitter. I did well.
By the time this podcast hits, there will be an article up about the recent constructed event that JT and myself both attended. And I could see our local scene kind of going the way you said yours did. We had a constructed event last night, and there were some people there that, you know, they really just like the superhero sets, and that's cool. They'd never really bought into Yu-Gi-Oh! Or D&D. They just like the superhero stuff. Other people played, you know, more varied teams, and there were a few people that were really interested in, you know, how I was using the Professor X Global. I took my Fireball team with me, and, you know, they were seeing basic actions that, you know, they hadn't really thought of before because they didn't buy those sets. And so I'm interested to see how this scene evolves going forward. See if anyone, you know, makes any changes. I mean, there was one player who right after, you know, we played, he was like, "Well, I don't have that Professor X Global. Do you have the common that has that Professor X Global?" And so I gave it to him right there. So I'm assuming he's going to find a way to use Professor X the next time we play Constructed. But yeah, much like you said, your local scene, there was differences between week one and week two. I'm excited to see that as well.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I can't wait to see how this full constructed event goes. Really, both the one I'm going to tomorrow as we record this and the one that's coming up about 2 weeks after this episode drops. I think it'll be a lot of fun to see what people come up with. So, I talked a moment ago about Red Tornado, and we want to get into a topic that is related to why I had Red Tornado on my team. That is resource management, and of course, also combined with that is a bit of resource disruption. We've said this many times. I've said this in articles, and I'm going to say it until I start to hear other people say it too. Dice Masters, I think it does a great job fooling some people. This looks like a game that is right in line with Magic the Gathering, with, you know, Pokemon, with Yu-Gi-Oh!, with any of those CCGs where you're playing your cards from a deck and things are randomized and you're spending you're tapping your mana or doing whatever else you're going to do and playing stuff and trying to beat down your opponent. And it does have a lot of similarities there. It does. But it is much... But it has as much, if not more, in common with the Euro games that are so popular right now, specifically with, obviously, Quarriors, but before that, the granddaddy of all of these pool-building games, Spiel des Jahres winner, Dominion. Now, Randy, I don't know, have you played Dominion?
I have played Dominion.
Okay.
Probably not as much as a good handful of our listeners. I've really only played it twice. So I don't have a lot of experience, but I understand, you know, the deck building technique that comes with it. And yeah, I do see your similarities when it comes to the resources.
Yes,
and
absolutely. Well, because we are expending our resources, we are building cards into our pool, and we are working for efficiency. And what are most Euro games, if not economic engine efficiency building games? As you go through a game of Dominion, you are trying to tune it so that you can spend more stuff, buy more stuff, get more points. In our case, get more damage done to your opponent. Let's think about Star Realms, where it is even like focused and used as damage. You're trying to tune your deck to take advantage of different synergies with the cards. And now, in deck building games, it's a common pool, and that's how it was in Quarriors. But here, we get to decide what those cards are. A little bit more like in Dominion, where you have a pool of 8 cards, but they're finite. They're in front of you, and you have a finite amount of each of them, and you know where they are. Because you can just buy... You want a village, you buy a village. In other ones, they come up randomly in the center. That happens in Star Realms, that happens in Ascension, that happens in many of the others.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot like Dominion, and of course Quarriors, because it's based on Quarriors. So, I mean, I'm drawing the line, though, to Dominion, because we know this is like Quarriors.
I do want to add something real quick. For those
Please.
Of you who have or have not played Dominion, if you're really into the superhero genre, Marvel Legendary is almost a straight lift from Dominion in terms of, you have... money to buy resources, you can recruit new heroes, and you use those heroes to defeat villains, and then you can get more resources, and it's very built on efficiency of getting through your deck quickly, drawing more cards, and, I mean, it's very, very similar to Dominion, but it has, maybe a genre that you're more in line with. So, I just wanted to throw that out there real quick.
I agree. I agree completely. That's an important point to make. So, but in all of these games, in Quarriors too, you're trying to make your engine the most efficient that it can be. And the way you do that is, a couple of ways. You're trying to get the resources that you have. In our case, bolts, masks, shields, fists, question marks, generics. And, in our case that, in other cases, gold, or in Quarriors, quiddity. Which I still feel silly saying. Sorry, Eric Lang and Mike Elliott, but yeah. You're trying to use those in the most efficient way possible in order to make your pool of cards be the most efficient that they can be. Or in our case, your pool of dice be the most efficient that they can be. And you're getting cards that give you extra buys. Or in our case, extra energy and extra dice. So it's very important that we understand how economic resource management works in this game. And then also, how and why disrupting what your opponent has and what your opponent is doing, both of these, we need to understand why they're so important and how to use them as effectively as we can. So let's define our parameters first, Randy. Off the air, you had a good question, and I'd like you to raise that again here so that we can actually discuss it.
We were talking about resources, how energy is an obvious resource. Is life a resource?
I would say yes. I think for the purposes of the conversation, I don't think we're going to touch upon that as much. But life can be a resource, right? Because we have a global like Silver Surfer where you pay a shield and you spend 2 life and you get to do that thing.
Yes.
You have an opponent, and this was your example. I'm sorry, I'm stealing it. You have an opponent who puts Jinzo out. Now you have to start thinking of your life as a resource because now all of your globals have an additional cost or to a lesser extent, let's say Professor X. From Avengers versus X-Men, right? Now all these things have an extra added cost to them. But I think in terms of efficient use of resources, we have to be efficient with our life or we can spend ourselves right down to zero. I mean, that's just how it is. I think for the purposes of the conversation, I really think we're talking about like traditional resources in this game, those fists, bolts, shields, masks, question marks, and generics.
Yes, I'd have to agree. I think a big part of that, why we can't, really look at life as a resource right now, is there's just not enough things that let you pay life or take damage on your own to be able to do extra abilities. I mean, look at Magic the Gathering. There are plenty of cards that say, pay, X life to do X this. We definitely don't have anything like that right now. Maybe someday life will be more of a resource and a renewable resource at that, since there is some life gain. But yeah, right now we just have to look at energy mostly.
Yeah, we do. And we're starting to see some more interesting cards. That OP Constantine is kind of neat, right? When fielded, once per turn, gain one life. That's it. He's a cheap card. He's cheap to field. The only problem with him is that he's not, like, the super rare. But that's okay, depending on the format that you're playing. Somebody used him in the DC Constructed, and they were whittling away at the one person and okay with taking some damage because they just feel a Constantine. They're like, oh, came back. I'll take that sidekick because now I'm fielding my Constantine. So, yeah, I think we're going to start to see that work its way in more meaningful ways. But today, let's talk about this. So I guess the first thing is the first thing in the index, if we were looking it up that way, would be resources, comma, effective uses of. So let's talk first about, I think this is a really common trap that I see newer players, less experienced players fall into, and also some very experienced players fall into at times. Efficient purchases. The trap that I see is inefficient purchases, but in this case, efficient purchases. Knowing when to buy what, how much you should spend, the cost of either letting these resources go to waste or having another die in your bag that you have to get through.
I know this can trip me up at times in the sense that if I have 4 energy, I feel the need to spend all 4 energy. Mm-hmm. Now, late in the game, I feel like I do have a good head on my shoulders because I can look at my, I can look at my team, I can look at my board state and say, you know what? I don't need to buy anything. I'm fine. I can let these 2 or 3 energy go to waste. But man, I'll be darned if I buy a 3-cost character if I have 4 energy to spend.
Oh yeah? Well, now why is that?
I don't know. I feel like it's inefficient. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe part of that is because, I mean, there's still some characters that don't have, like a Gobby. And, I mean, Gobby might be the perfect example, where a 3-cost Gobby would be better for your team than most 4-cost characters. And so, spending that 3 energy, wasting your 4th to buy a Gobby, is probably better than buying any 4-cost character. That's just in the heat of the battle, in the middle of a game, it's hard for me to understand that if I'm going to spend any energy, I have to spend it all. And that's not necessarily the case.
All right, because you also have to consider what globals are available. I found myself in a game very recently where I'm like, man, I have these 3 dice. And their energy, I could buy, I actually was a Gobby. I could buy this Gobby. And then I'm looking at the globals that I have, and I'm looking at the energy that's there, and I have I think I had like a bolt, a mask, and a question mark. And you can do so many different things with that. And with the team I was playing, I could do so many different things with that. It wasn't just the potential was there like in an ideal situation. The globals were there that I could do a lot of neat stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose not to buy. And sometimes you're going to end up not spending that energy. I guess it's a question of, how are we defining, is efficiency like I have 4 so I must spend 4 or I'm not getting my money's worth? Or is it a little bit more of a know when to hold them, know when to fold them kind of mentality? Because there's times when buying will make you less efficient, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. For instance, the perfect example, I was playing in a constructed event last night and I had enough masks to use Professor X Global 3 times. If I bought this character, I could use, Professor X Global 3 times to, make sure I roll everything. But I didn't do that. I instead used energy and I bought a character that was, it cut into my ramp a little bit, but I bought a bigger character. I bought a Hulk and I wasn't able to ramp enough to ensure that I was rolling everything. Whereas if I would have just settled with a lower cost die, I could have 100% ensured I rolled every single one of my dice the next turn. And that's the smart move. But while playing the game, it's like, oh, I've got this energy, I've got it here, there's the Hulk. yeah, I'll be fine. I'll go ahead and do this.
Right. Yeah. It and it's so tough to make those decisions sometimes in the moment, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think the most effective thing that we can do is kind of retrain ourselves to think that, again, just because we can buy it doesn't mean we must buy it. And think ahead to your opponent's turn, and what can they really do to you? Because we have the information. We can know how many dice are in their bag. We know what's in their used pile. We know what's in their prep area. And we know what they have in their field. And we know what all their cards are. Now, we don't know what they're thinking, and we don't know if they're going to make the optimal play. But if we start to think, well, man, I have some retaliation available here. And if I have a bolt, I can knock out that Solomon Grundy. I have that question mark. I can make something else into a villain before I do that. So I could actually just save, instead of buying something, I could save this. I could knock out something important on my opponent's turn. I'm doing a couple of damage to them. And I'm re-rolling Grundy next turn. And maybe I save that mask. Maybe I can PXG. Maybe I can resurrect on my turn or something like that. But or Villainous Pact is another option there too.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing how to do that is just, it's so key. So efficient purchases mean more than just spending all your energy when you can. It's also knowing what you shouldn't spend. Because clogging up your bag with extra dice is just not good. It's not good. So let's move on then into efficient use of globals. I mean, we have Professor X. We have Blue Eyes. We have the Red Dragon Global. We have the Thousand Dragon Global, which is similar to Red Dragon, but without the damage. There are times when you might not want that damage. You know, a quick Hulk team or something like that. We have a lot of globals that are efficient. We have other globals that are not necessarily as much. And let's expand this maybe, not just globals, but like character abilities with a cost. Like, say, Psylocke, right? We have some things that cost, like, 2 bolts to do something. How can we use globals, like, the most efficiently within all of these different things? Like, how do we know when it's time to use that global or that character ability and how?
You know, I think in order to, use globals effectively, first thing we want to cover is, your opponent is going to probably bring some globals to the table. They might be globals that you don't have. You really have to understand what they do, how to use them, when to use them, and always, always have your end game scenario in mind. Does this help me in any way achieve my end game scenario?
Mm-hmm.
One instance that I had to kind of train myself not to do is on my first turn, it's doesn't really benefit me at all to use the Resurrection Global. I mean, if I really need that 5-cost character on turn 2, then yeah, I can go for it. But if I wait until turn 2 to use Resurrection, then I'm refilling my bag with what I purchased from turn 1 and potentially purchased from turn 2 as well. Because my bag will have been empty and I have to draw one, so I refill. But yeah, Resurrection, it's a great global. You get a die. But
mm-hmm.
It's an energy you would spend, and it wouldn't really help you achieve your end game.
Well, and it's all about timing there, too. I mean, And it's all about, I guess, what else can I do with this shield at the time that I'm going to do it? Like, you know, like you said, if it's early here, you talked about this earlier too. If it's earlier, I'm going to use Resurrection. I'm going to get an extra die in prep, and maybe I'm getting those 4 or 5 dice that are in used that I want to see like right away into my bag, and I know I'm going to get those next turn, and that's awesome, rah rah, yay me, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can help you get stuff on demand, but then there are other times when you know. Is it worth having that shield to be able to activate Human Paladin versus using that Resurrection? And then you start to get into a little bit more of a quagmire because your opponent might not do anything or have the capacity to do anything on their turn that makes having saved that energy worth it. And those are hard questions to ask yourself.
Yeah.
So when we talk about efficiency, again, it can't just be for the sake of spending it because we have it, and if we don't, we waste it. It has to be, like, it has to be a little more educated than that.
Hey.
So what brings us, what gives us that education? Is it just, like, game experience?
I think it's absolutely game experience. And it's going to change from game to game. It's not just having experience piloting your team, knowing what's best for your team. It's having experience going against this specific character across the board. I mean, maybe if I know you have Jinzo in your prep area, and I do not want to deal with that Jinzo. You know what? Maybe I'll use a few extra globals on my turn to set myself up to be able to get rid of Jinzo instead of, you know, waiting till your turn to PXG to ramp and I'm taking a couple damage every time. It's definitely game experience. But like mm-hmm. I said, not just with your own team, but against opposing teams.
Yeah, I think I would also say it's a bit of discipline, and certainly that does come with experience, but there's often that feeling, and I know you've said you felt this before, and certainly I have too. There's that feeling of, oh, I can do this. I got to do this. I can. I will. I got to. And that's not necessarily always true. So it's kind of having a more of a Mr. Spock kind of angle to the game, and recognizing you know, the logic of the situation and thinking ahead. You know, to harken back to a few episodes ago in a topic that we just will not let die, having a plan. If I just play it because I can, then I might not actually be sticking to my plan. Because my plan is to win a certain way, and you alluded to this earlier with the win condition. I'm using the word allude a lot today. That's okay. You alluded to this earlier. You referenced it. You talked about it, Randy, earlier with the win condition. If what I'm doing is just because I can, then it's not actually helping me get to my win condition. The most important thing I can do is either is contribute directly to the win condition, make the win condition more efficient, or protect the win condition. And sometimes, depending on where we are in the game and what the board state looks like and what my opponent can do to me, each of those three heads there, you know, we have to attack the... We have to attack different ones. Like, the import of each one changes depending on the state that we find ourselves in.
Yes, that was very well said. You know, the three things. Achieve the win condition, you know, get there
Make
more quickly.
Make it more efficient, yeah.
Or protect the win condition. That's everything you do in this game should fall into one of those categories. If it's not, it's kind of wasted energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it goes back to a point we made, too, an episode or two ago, where you cannot worry about what everybody else is going to bring. Unless there is, like, one thing that's always in your meta, you can't worry about it. You got to say, like, what do I worry about stuff doing to my team? Okay, like, what is my team really weak against? What are those threats? Mm-hmm. Okay, how can I stop that? And then you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one character that... You know, if your opponent fields that character, you're like, well, game, set, match, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, you should probably have an escape plan for that character. But otherwise, you can't worry about it. You need to focus on your own win condition.
Exactly. Then let's move on to efficient character exposure. There are different ways that we put our characters out there. And some characters we put out just to have them knocked out. Some characters we put in the field and we attack with for their when attack ability. Sometimes we say, you know, block this, I dare you. Because you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. And some we just sit out there to mess with you. But certainly we have characters that help us with efficiency just by how we put them out there. We put it out to get knocked out. It goes into our prep. Now it's at least energy. We put it out there to block and be knocked out or to just plain block. And now it gives us dice like beast. We put it out there to take advantage of when Fielding and Gambit gets us an extra die and helps us go through our bag a little faster. Or we put it out there and we don't want it to go anywhere at all, like that pesky Red Tornado that kept coming up energy that I'm going to beat Red Tornado in the face that helps us get through our bag faster. So it's the way that we put our characters out there to help that efficiency, and also, like, how does it help us to have that character out there that way? Like, for example, Red Tornado... I buy him as soon as I can get him out in the field. I'm not planning on putting him back through my bag.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really mess with what I'm trying to do in my bag. And he doesn't, you know, he certainly helps me get the dice out there faster. Beast. I'm not attacking with him. I'm blocking with him. And I'm getting dice out there in my prep area. Or that Nova who I can just ping and get dice in my prep area. You know, my intention is sometimes for them to sit or to get knocked out. Then that beast gets knocked out. Oh, darn. He's in my reserve pool. I get to roll him next, my used pile. I get to roll him next turn. Crud. Darn it. That was an intentional snap, folks, not an edit snap. That was a darn. Aw, shucks.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some characters that you plant in the field, and you just want to turn some more dice with them. I mean, this just goes to show the way we think about the game differently. When I think about characters that I want to camp in the field, my mind first goes to ones that reduce costs. I mean, like the common Nick Fury, that your Avengers are free to field. Well, that's saving energy right there. There's the Aquaman that reduces the cost of a Justice League characters by one. There's the Mummy from Dungeons and Dragons that reduces the cost of mass characters by one. There's all different kinds of way that you can just park a character in your field and reap the benefits.
This is true. But sometimes you don't want to just park it in the field. Sometimes you want it to get knocked out. So again, it's like efficiency in terms of how am I putting this character out there? Am I putting this out and it gives me a bonus, but then it just ends up going like right back through my bag? That doesn't really help me necessarily. It gets me an extra die, but this die is going to go right back through the bag. So it's like kind of, it's almost like the point is moot. Okay, I got a die out of my bag, and now I basically just swapped it for a die that's in my bag.
Yeah. I think a good example of this is the Uncanny X-Men Cyclops. He's got a great while-active ability. You just want to get him in the field, leave him there, and, you know, all the damage done by your Bolt characters is, you know, increased by one, but he's got a low defense. So he's probably not going to survive.
And yeah, well, and hopefully he just goes to prep, right?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, hopefully.
But maybe he's taunted, the effective transfer power happens, and it's like, yeah, I'll take Cyclops' now one damage and bye. Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, let's look at the other side of it, too. If I have Blue Eyes White Dragon, because, right, I'm knocking out a character, so I'm still taking advantage of my character being out there. It's exposed in some way.
Yes.
I'm knocking out my character to pay for this. It's not necessarily a discount. I'm still spending two dice. Now, I'm spending them at different times, and I do get something in prep. But fundamentally, if I field a sidekick and pay a bolt to knock that sidekick out to buy something else for cheaper, I still spent, like, three dice to do that, like if I'm talking a three-cost character.
Yeah.
I still spent three dice. Now, I get one in my prep area, but now I also have one more in my used pile. Now, hopefully that's a die I want in my used pile much more than I would want another sidekick in my used pile. But nonetheless, I still have essentially spent the same amount, and what's the value of a die in the prep area compared to a die in the field or the used pile? You know, Magic has a term. They talk like they like to talk about how much of a card something is. Like, they're all cards, but if we're talking in terms of advantage in the game, like, right, card advantage, how much of a card is this worth for the ability that it has? And sometimes that value changes in different stages of the game. So, you know, what's the value of that die that's out there versus, like, keeping a sidekick in the field? I knock that sidekick out. I'm going to roll it next turn. It's probably not going to be a sidekick again. It could be 1 in 6, but it's probably not going to be a sidekick again. So would it have been better to have that in the field and not have that in my bag? I don't know. And there's maybe some math there, or maybe some fudging the numbers that we have to do there to determine how some of that is. But I think that's an important point to make there too. When we talk about a global like Blue Eyes, especially, we're still spending the same thing. We get that die in prep, but sometimes what's the cost of that? That's part of the genius of Dean using Solomon Grundy the way that he did. Because on his turn, you know, Solomon Grundy's planted there until he needs it. Okay, knock it out. And now I can get a discount on something. Well, that Grundy's there specifically to be knocked out. And he gets the discount. Now, you paid to field that Grundy, and that's fine. But each turn that Grundy sits in the field not needing to be KO'd, that cost of having to field him just comes down more and more. And now you have the opportunity to just do it again. using Blue Eyes to knock out a Gobby. You want to roll that Gobby again next turn because you want to do more damage next turn. Or to on a retaliation team because you want to knock out a villain. That's doing damage. You roll it next turn and you come back again. So there are different ways we can do that for you know, different kinds of effect. If we knock out something that has a when KO'd or a when fielded ability, then we really help ourselves from an advantage standpoint.
Yeah. One character that comes to mind that is maybe a little deceptive in how uneconomic it could be is the rare Psylocke. Because, I mean, she's free to field on two of her faces, but let's just say, for the sake of this argument, she's on level 3. So you have to pay one energy to field her.
Uh-huh.
Now, we want to field her because she has that great when fielded ability. You can pay two masks to KO character. So we would want... She would be the prime candidate to Blue Eyes. So we would pay another bolt to sacrifice her. You know, we can reduce the cost of something else by two if we're going to purchase. And next turn, you know, we roll her again. We may have to pay a fielding cost. And then we may have to pay two more mask energies. I mean, that is a lot
she gets
of energy.
Really expensive. Yeah.
That is a lot of energy investing. Now, it's removal. And removal is good and it can be key. And you know what? There are times that paying all of that energy for that one removal will win you the game. But that it has potential to really, really ruin your, your churn, your ramp, your resources.
And I'm glad you brought those words up because we're going to get to that in just like 2 seconds. I guess the last point I want to make since you brought up Psylocke is that her efficiency was in question before, even when she was very popular. It's even more in question now when it's easy to say, oh, she's in your prep. I don't want you to remove that thing. All right, I name Psylocke because I have Constantine in my field. So you're not removing anything. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know. So, all right. Well, then let's talk about churn and ramp. These terms are used sometimes interchangeably. That's not necessarily correct, though I understand why it happens. Both have been talked about quite a lot. Churn was the very second episode of the reserve pool. And ramp has kind of come in as another term the way we go through. My heart is probably a little closer to churn in that maybe it was because it was a slightly earlier concept the way we talked about it. Ramp really started to be discussed as Professor X came out with that amazing global that was all over the place and is now a little bit less so. The thing I like about churn is that it's easy for people who come from other games to relate to it, I think. If I'm playing a deck-building game, or if I'm playing Magic, like, in Magic, if I objectively, like, think of those cards like, Lightning Bolt? Like, they have that series of cards where you pay one and you get three of something.
Yeah.
Right? Pay one mana, deal three damage. How about pay one energy, you know, pay one thing, draw three cards? Imagine that in whatever your other game is. Magic, Ascension, Dominion, you know, the new Epic CCG that's coming out, not quite an LCG that's coming out via Kickstarter, if you got to demo that. Objectively, a card that's like, you know, pay this, draw three cards. You know, Netrunner has Diesel, I think, that does that. I might even be free. Pay zero, draw three cards. That's great. You get more cards. Because normally, you're like drawing one card a turn. You're drawing a finite number of things a turn. And now you get to draw more. Not only does that mean you have more stuff you can do and spend and more choices on your turn, but it also means that the cards that you already played, you're going to get to them a little faster. You're going to get to see them again. Or if you have a finite deck that doesn't cycle, like not in a deck building game, you're going to get to those cards at the bottom of your deck a little bit faster. You're going to get to see some of those rarer cards, maybe some of those two ofs that would only be, you know, that would be so good if you came up with them right now. Those all help. That's churn. Is acceleration through. Now, ramp, so closely related. Ramp is basically just saying, I want to be able to roll as many dice as possible. I want to ramp up the amount of dice that I'm rolling each turn. I can normally just roll 4. How can I roll 5? How can I roll 6? How can I roll 7? There's a game that Dane Lumen played at Worlds, And I think, like, the whole game, like, we were kind of talking about it later in awe of it. The whole game, I don't think he ever actually had to use his back. He was just able to ramp so efficiently and so effectively with what was there. And that's pretty darn cool, because now you're seeing your dice as often as possible. It's like a combination of turn and ramp. You're seeing all of your dice as often as you possibly can, and you're rolling as many dice as you possibly can each turn. I mean, win-win, right? So it's no wonder they're used interchangeably. It's not necessarily correct, but I think we're all going to keep doing it, myself included sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can churn enough to roll your whole, you know, dice bag, and you can ramp enough to roll your whole dice bag. It's they achieve when they're performing, you know, at 100% optimum, then they have the same effect.
Uh-huh.
But they just have different routes of going there.
This is true. This is true. And I mean, some of them work in tandem, right? Because if I can get those sidekicks out of my used pile and into my prep area, then I have fewer dice that are going to go through my bag. So I'm going to see that big nasty that I just bought just a little bit sooner. So, I mean, they do operate hand in hand very, very well. You know, some of the discounts that Blue Eyes gives me, that sidekick that I spent instead of going to my used pile, it does go to my prep area. So, you know, that's one fewer die I'm worried about. Things like that. Those can help. Those can help. So how to use it and when, I think, is maybe a silly question at this point for some. But because, I mean, I think we pretty much know, like, okay, it's my opponent's turn. I'm going to use Professor X, and I'm going to wait till, okay, you pass priority to me on the main step, and I'm going to PXG twice, three times, a gazillion times, and I'm done. Oh, I got this thing. I'm going to Blue Eyes it. I'm good. I'm going to Resurrection, and then I'm going to Villainous Pact. Oh, we're good. Oh, we both bought Resurrection. I'm going to do them both now, and we're good. How do we use it and when? I think that goes back to what we just talked about with Efficient Globals a little bit, right? When is it more important for me to keep this for defensive purposes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And there's no wide sweeping statement. When you always do this instead. Or mm-hmm. When you always see this, then do this. It's such a game by game basis. And I know that might be frustrating for some to hear that, like, well, why am I listening to this podcast if they're not giving me the answers? But man, it really is a case-by-case basis.
It really is. I mean, especially because, again, you can't necessarily predict, as we saw at Worlds, you can't predict what everybody's going to bring and how they're going to use it and what protection they're going to have around it. So do your thing and evaluate what's on the other side of the board from you. And that's going to tell you how to use it and when. You know, I'm working a little bit with Lauren on a team that she wants to take for the thing on Saturday down at Four Horsemen in Morgantown. And she saw what she wanted to play, and she did it on her own. I gave her some pointers and helped out where I could. But, you know, it's her own thing, and I'm really excited for her. I hope she does very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has an interesting concept that can win. But, you know, we're kind of looking at some of the choices that she has to make. And, like, the biggest thing is going to be, like, we don't know what people are going to bring. I mean, we start to see, like, oh, Truby played this. Truby's in that area. He's going to play this. Or, you know, some other characters we've seen, or some other people we've seen them play these kinds of characters before. They might try this kind of thing. Or they could show up with something totally different. So, like, just be prepared to look at what's on the other board and know how that's going to impact what you're buying and what your resource efficiency is going to be like. You know, she's trying to think, with Prismatic Spray being a thing, should she bother bringing Professor X? And she decided to do it because those first couple of turns where she knows that her opponent's not going to have Prismatic Spray, Professor X helps her enough that she's okay if that ends up being a dead slot sometimes later on. And I think that's an interesting choice. It can be a risky choice, but I think it's a gutsy one. And not just because she's my wife and might listen to this and hit me if I say otherwise. You know. I think it's a gutsy choice, recognizing this is that important to me at this point. So I guess then let's get into the other thing. Like, would you ever, like, you roll, you look at something, you have, like, the energy that lets you buy and use an efficiency global, but that's maybe not necessarily the optimum thing, would you re-roll some stuff to try and get to the more optimum thing, or would you stick with, like, okay, I can get the buy I want, I can use something that helps me be efficient, even if it's not, like, the perfect thing? Do you stay and settle for the efficiency, or do you settle for the ramp and the churn, or do you try to re-roll to go for the maximum thing? I don't think that everybody's going to answer this the same, and I don't think the answer is the same like at every board state either.
Oh, no. I think about 90% of the time, I would just stay with it. Just in enough of the games I've played, I have come to the realization that I need to keep my efficiency up by ramping, by churning, by doing what I need to do, even if it means I have a dud turn, you know, here or there. Let's say I roll 7 dice this turn. Mm-hmm. I could make a purchase that was, you know, it's kind of what I want to do, but it would cost me everything, and I'd just be rolling 4 dice next turn. Or I could make another purchase where it's, you know, maybe it's a little safer. It's not going to win me the game in 3 turns, but it's a safe purchase, and I can keep my efficiency up. And I can make sure I'm rolling 6 or 7 dice again next turn. And that's usually the route I'll go. But man, that's totally different depending on my life. If I'm at 5 life, I'll probably take the gutsy buy, thinking I don't have long to turn this thing around. I gotta right this ship right now. And so I'll take that chance. I'll totally throw my ramp out the window to be able to buy that Hulk or buy that Doctor Strange or whatever, buy that Tarrasque. And, you know, hopefully I'll get him in another turn or two, and, you know, then I can win. But it usually takes being pressed up against the wall for me to say, you know, throw it all out the window. Let's buy what we need to win, you know, even if it's a 2% chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we're all about maximizing that win equity here. I mean, you have to do it. You have to push for the smallest amount. Like, I think a good player looks and says, okay, I'm in a bad position here. I'll do what I can. I'm probably going to lose. This is only like 10% here. That's all I got. I think a really good player starts to say, okay, I'm only at like 10% here. I think if I do these couple of things, I can get to like 15 or 20. And I still might not win, but I've done the most that I can. And that helps you start to realize, like, when you have, you know, when you have 70, when you're at 70%, like, I'm winning, how to not make bonehead plays that just say, hey, I'm winning, and assume that you have it, even though, you know, there's still that chance that your opponent can win, and understanding how to, like, maximize things there. And I guess that gets into something you said there too. You know, when is too much a bad thing? And I think too much is a bad thing when you go all 100% for broke to like do the thing that's going to maximize the ramp that you have. You know, unless it's like turn one and you want to roll 7 on turn 2 to buy something really pricey.
Yeah.
When you do things to maximize the ramp that you can have versus like buying stuff that helps you win or paying for globals that help you win, that's when too much of this is a bad thing. You can ramp too much. You can ramp too often. Yep. I see people do it all the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did our AVX 6-pack earlier. I mean, I don't know how many times I saw people buying, you know, more beasts early on in AVX when they don't need to buy another beast.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, that'll help keep their churn up. But if they're already, you know, well within what they need to be doing, then they need to be approaching end game. That's not the time to buy beasts. That's the time to, you know, to buy that Phoenix.
Right. Yeah, you got to know how to use those dice you're rolling there. All right. Well, very cool then. So we spent like a whole episode talking about how important it is to have this and to use it and understand how to be good with it and efficient with it. Let's kind of roll on to another point here then, which is just as key, and that is disruption, both when your opponent disrupts yours and when you disrupt your opponent's. You know, one that we've certainly seen plenty of is the big bad prismatic spray. One player has PXG, the other player doesn't. They have prismatic spray. They use prismatic spray on their turn, thus wiping Professor X of its card text. And now your opponent has some masks and a whole used pile full of dice that just nothing can be done with. That hurts.
Yeah. To go back to some Magic terms, I mean, this whole idea of disruption is very, very control, and it's very, very blue in Magic terms. I hate blue. I hate counterspells. I hate disruption. Man, just there is nothing that, you know, lights a fire under me more than going up against a counterspell deck in Magic. Just,
well, let's get to a tangential point here, and this is actually really important. Think about, let's go back to our deck list visualization from a few episodes ago, and think about a counterspell and what's happening with it.
You are waiting for your opponent to do something, and you are responding by telling them they can't.
Okay, now here's something very interesting about this. When we did our decklist visualization a few weeks ago, when we were talking about my Aquaman is in the field and it's doing this, my Wonder Woman is here and it's doing this, but you said you are using counterspell in this way. You didn't use personal pronouns, right? You used you. Some hypothetical opponent is waiting for their opponent to do this thing. So
yes.
Something interesting is that every single card in these types of games has either been played by us or against us. Every single one.
That is true.
Counterspell for you in Magic is not something that you play. It's something that happens to you. Whereas, you know, that Doctor Strange, which you found an affinity for, is something that you do to other people. You hit them with that extra damage because you play that action die or whatever else. That's something that you do. So it's just an interesting point that you bring up there that I think is kind of funny. Yes, it turns out that we've all played, every card has either been played against us or by us. And that's pretty interesting.
And I think we do separate in our mind, you know, which way it is. I mean, for me, Jinzo is very much against me. I have never played a Jinzo. Jinzo is terrible. I hate it.
It's not your thing. No. Yeah, you hate it because you hate what it does to you.
Yes.
But then here's the other side of that. Do you let those things get you off your game?
Not if I win.
Well, and that's where it goes with disruption as well. So Jinzo's a great piece of disruption. He turns it's not just spending your resource now. It's potentially spending your life. And you have to have a way to deal with that. You know, Prismatic Spray. Disruption, because now you can't ramp. Mm-hmm. Sometimes disruption is as key as letting those attackers through, even though it takes you down to like 6 life, because that might allow you to win the next turn.
Yes.
You know, it takes you down low now. In the end, that might do you in, but you probably aren't going to win anyway if you don't let that happen. And that goes again to maximizing the equity.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Hulk is in the used pile, and along with this sidekick and this other character and a whole bunch of other dice, and they're not going to get through your bag as fast as you'd like them to. That gives you sometimes some very important time. You regroup on your turn, and now maybe you have lethal.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks that I just had to take 12 damage to the face to let all that go to your used pile, but it gives me time, and I know what I'm getting next turn.
Exactly. If I do this, I think I have a good shot at closing the door next turn. Or in 2 turns, because they're not going to be, because of the situation I've put them in, they're not going to be able to set back up that fast. And that can be a scary decision to make. It can. So. All right. So that's resource management. There's a lot of articles and a lot of other stuff out there with it, but we wanted to kind of dig deep in this episode and sort of talk about even some of our own hang-ups with it, because we're not perfect. None of us are. This game is not that old for us to be able to say, you know, that somebody is a definite, you know, subject matter expert all the time. We have a lot of people who talk a lot about it and play very well. But we're still all growing with whatever's going to happen, and we're growing with the card pool, and we're growing with the new ways that we see new cards and old cards alike played all the time. You know, we're going to have new resource management. We're going to get more discounts for tribal abilities. Just look at War of Light. In all of those lantern synergies, things are going to get really interesting really soon. But when we're talking about making your team more efficient, we're talking about cards that give you that ramp, give you that churn, help you get those dice faster, all those sorts of things. When we're talking about resource management, we're talking about getting your dice faster, getting them in the right quantities, getting the right energy up. And we're also talking about knowing what to spend, how to spend it, and most importantly, why you're spending it the way that you choose to. And that's all so key. So, if you have any questions for us, if you want to talk more about us, if you want to tell us that we are just blatantly wrong, we have forums. We have a website, you know, reservepool.com. We have Twitter, or thereservepool.com. We have Twitter, at the Reserve Pool. We have Facebook. We have a plethora of ways. If you prefer it to be in private, you can private message us on the boards. You can also send a message to mailbag@thereservepool.com. We want to hear from you. Another important thing you can do for us is to leave a review on iTunes. It does help us get the word out there, and we'll be more than happy to do, as we've done with the Reserve Pool at times, and just give some kudos and thanks for reviews that you've left behind. Not just the star ratings, but also the verbatims, because that helps us know what we're doing that you like, what we're doing that we could improve. And I can tell you, feedback, public and private, we have definitely many times, you know, taken that to heart. Not just changed it because somebody said we could, but, you know, reflected and said, do we think this is valid? And if we do, what do we do about it? So to that end, Randy, do you have anything else to take us home with on this topic?
Nothing that's already, nothing that hasn't been said already. Just don't waste energy because you have it to spend. Don't let it burn a hole in your pocket.
Yep. It's true. And actually, let me say before we finish this off that I do want to spend some energy to say thanks to GW5111. Who a little earlier on, actually, towards the beginning of this show, left us a nice review on iTunes. So thank you for the 5-star review. We really do appreciate it. You can find us there. You can find us on our RSS feed. You can find us everywhere. But we appreciate you spending your time with us. I say this all the time, but seriously, there are so many podcasts out there. There's so much content for us to consume these days. I listen to a lot of it, too. I'm subscribed to so many podcasts. I use Netflix plenty. So many ways and places you can consume content these days. I greatly appreciate from the bottom of my heart that you choose to spend some time here with us. So, otherwise, from all of us here at the Reserve Pool Network and within the Attack Zone, thanks for listening. This is Dave.
And this is Randy.
And we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.